Pick up our kind of conversation review by really beginning after the fall when sin and death enter the world. There is a significant problem now in God's created world where all that he experienced or all that he created for us to experience is ruined and destroyed and fractured. And we talked about that on an ongoing basis here, how sin kind of ruins our life, how it makes itself known inside the human soul, and how that works itself out in all kinds of awful ways in our lives that all of us know and feel and understand, and we could spend years highlighting all of the ways in which we have felt it sting in our life in one way or another. And after the fall enters, God goes to work to redeem his world ultimately and begins in a very kind of interesting way where he picks a guy by the name of Abram. Abram's not uniquely special, but God picks Abram and says, Abram, I'm going to pick you and your family and all your descendants and everybody that comes after you. You're going to be my people. I'm going to be your God, and we're going to walk together. And through this relationship, I'm going to bless you. And through this blessing, you are going to bless all other nations. And by blessing, I mean they're going to be invited in to what God is doing, what he loves, and that they would experience life and life to its full through this relationship with the living God. In Genesis chapter 12, we read this weeks ago now, but we'll throw it up on the screen. This is this big promise of God to Abram as to what he wants to do through this particular group of people. I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you, and I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. All people on the earth will be blessed through you. And again, this blessing is very simple. God longs to redeem his world that he has made that has now fallen, that struggle under the weight of sin and death. And through this relationship that God has established with Abram, other nations, other peoples might see something profoundly different in the way they live in response to their God, and they join in for their great joy, for God's beautiful glory. And we have been working this through all the way in the story. God is about his agenda and his agenda only, that his people, starting with Abram, would declare the goodness and glory of God so that the rest of the created world would respond rightly to who he is and then flourish in life his way. We see this at play with Abram, with Joseph, with Moses, and all of these big names that we looked at in the fall. And after God brings them out of slavery, after God ushers them out of the land of Egypt, he brings them to a land that was promised to Abram that we've called the promise, not that we've called, but it's called the promised land. And it's here under Joshua's leadership where they set up the 12 tribes. And we're going to put it on the screen just so you can see the geographical space that we're talking about. Because everything in the last, what feels like 12 weeks, is really around this area on the globe today. But these are the 12 tribes under Joshua, that it's here where Joshua and the Israelites are learning to live God's way. And as they do this, they flourish and other nations come into this space of blessing and get on with living life in relationship with the living God. We see the ups and downs of this relationship through after Joshua into the period of the judges. And this group of 12 tribes would become one united kingdom under David and then King Solomon. Saul is the one that is the first king of Israel after the people of God say, we want to have our own king. And God grants them their wish, ushers Saul in, but it's under David and Solomon that these 12 tribes would become united as one nation. We'll just put this next slide up just so you can get a sense of the kind of the kingdom that is all united under David and under King Solomon. And what is fascinating, again, God about his agenda through these two men, King David, King Solomon. These are like the glory years of Israel. It's kind of like if you're a Montreal Canadiens fan, it's like 75 to 79. This was our sweetest time in history. And like Israel, it's in the rearview mirror now. Like it's a long time ago, but it's kind of like that. This is where it was just great for them. There's a verse in 1 Kings 4:34 that reads like this. This is under Solomon's reign. All nations came to listen to Solomon's wisdom. They were astonished with his wisdom. God had granted Solomon wisdom. Why? To bless all the other nations. So God, even in this moment, through his people, nations from all over the world are coming together to listen to Solomon and his words of advice they take these words of advice, go back to their own nations, and in doing so, they are blessed as a people group through the wisdom that God has placed in Solomon. God is in the business and longing to redeem his world by blessing his people, that they then in turn would bless other people. Solomon dies, and the 12 tribes gather together to install their next king, which would be King Rehoboam. And this is where we picked it up kind of just after Christmas time. And this is where the trouble begins. The Israelite people ask the future king, King Rehoboam, would you lower taxes and would you reduce the workload that your father has placed on us? Rehoboam's response is simply no. And these 12 tribes become divided into two kingdoms. We'll put it up on the screen so you can see. There are two players now at work. There's the northern kingdom, which is Israel, which is the blue. These are the 10 tribes that refuse to acknowledge Rehoboam as king, and they go and set up their own king and their own kingdom. The south, the two tribes left, Judah and Simeon, they create their own kingdom, the southern kingdom. These two kingdoms are formed. For the most part, neither one of these kingdoms are overly interested in living life God's way or being about his agenda to the rest of the world. Decade after decade after decade, God sends his messengers warning his people, and this is where we've been working the last two or three Sundays, warning his people to stop the injustice, stop the slavery, stop the oppression, stop the idol worship, and they just refuse to listen to God's messengers as he sends to warn his people. It's in this moment where God brings slash allows the Assyrian army from the north to come in and take over the northern kingdom. We'll put this up on the screen. This is this first move of where the kingdom of God begins to basically dissolve and be ruined. The next week in the story, we picked it up where Hezekiah, he is one of the few kings in the south that hears the warnings of God and goes back to living life God's way, and they do well for a while. After Hezekiah dies, the people of Israel go back to their old ways, doing their old same things, and God continually warns them, if you keep doing this, if you keep practicing these things, if you keep ignoring who I am, the promise I made with you, all that I hope for you, if you just continue to do your own thing, the Babylonians are going to come in. This was through Ezekiel and Jeremiah, the two great prophets, warning them that God's coming. And if you refuse to listen, he's going to basically roll over you like you're nothing. And they refuse. And the Babylonians roll into the southern kingdom. And they take over. And it's this moment where we left it last week, where all that God had hoped for his people really is over and gone. The northern kingdom's gone. The southern kingdom is gone. The Israelite nation that began with Abram to do a great work that God had set them up to do, to bless and bring about all people coming into this life-giving relationship with the true and living God, appears to have come to just an abrupt halt. And it begs a series of questions, and we'll put them up on the screen. Well, now what? If God's agenda is to, in fact, redeem the world through his people that began with Abram, and now that people group is essentially absolved and pushed out into further regions of the entire kind of known Mesopotamian world at the time, well, what happens now? How is God going to bless this nation if this nation ceases to be? And how are other nations going to come in to this great space that God longs for them to be in? Well, I love how this story, chapter 18, begins, and you can read about it in the book of Daniel, and we're going to put it up on the screen. I love how it just continues to roll forward, and it reads like this. Daniel and three other young men were among those taken to Babylon. The Babylonians come into the southern kingdom. They absolutely destroy everything, and they take as slaves all the Israelite people. And similarly to every culture in the world, they highlight the really attractive ones, and they take them away, Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, to train them in the ways of their new way of life according to Babylonian living. These four characters come into real focus in this chapter, because God's purposes in the world, his agenda in the world, just keep on rolling. He doesn't actually even need the nation of Israel to be about the great work that he longs to do. He would love for them to be involved in it, but his plans and his heart for the lost and the world, heaven help us if it's on Israel's shoulders to do this. He just keeps rolling through these three, four individuals. Daniel chapter 1, through to chapter 6, highlights this. In Daniel chapter 1, we are introduced to Daniel in the morning service. I'm not a very good speller, and when I'm left to my own devices and I'm busy and I don't proofread, it was Danielle. And the first group were like, did he have a sister? And anyway, it was Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They come into focus quickly in Daniel chapter 1. God blesses these four men through food diet, through wisdom, through an ability to interpret dreams, and all kinds of things. And as the Babylonians kind of scrutinize these four guys, this is the response from the king as it relates to God working in these four people's lives. In every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king questioned them, he found that they were 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters in the whole kingdom. These four guys were 10 times better than Babylonia's best individuals. Why would God do this? Why would God give these four guys great insight, great wisdom, great kind of maneuverabilities through the ability to interpret dreams for all the things that were happening, to ultimately bless the kingdom of Babylon, the kingdom that has overthrown God's people? Why would God bless these four to bless the nation that has overthrown his people? Let's keep going. Chapter 2. Daniel's ability to interpret dreams is on full display. King Nebuchadnezzar has a very weird dream in the night, and it's a recurring dream, and he calls for his magicians to come, and he says, tell me what my dream is, and tell me what my dream means. The magician's response to King Nebuchadnezzar's response is this. He goes, there's no one on earth that can do what you're asking us to do. No king, however great and mighty, has ever asked such a thing of any magician or enchanter or astrologer. What the king asks is too difficult. No one can reveal it to the king except the gods, and they do not live among the humans. King Nebuchadnezzar loses his mind at his top aides and kills them all. It sounds like the White House. Anyway, we'll keep going. Daniel, before he is killed, asks for a moment with the king. They bring him into the king's room, and the king looks at Daniel and says, do you know what my dream is and what my dream means? Daniel's response is awesome. He says, no. No wise man, enchanter, magician, or diviner can ever explain the king's mystery and what he's asked us to do. But there is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries. And Daniel goes on to explain to the king the dream that he had and what that dream means. And Nebuchadnezzar responds appropriately, get ready for the meaning of the dream. Why would God do this? Why would God give Daniel the ability to interpret dreams to a king that has overthrown God's people, that is holding them as slaves and as hostages? Why would God bless Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to bless the conquering king that is harming his people? Here's why, and it begins in Daniel 2, 46, 47. King Nebuchadnezzar fell prostrate before Daniel and paid him honor and ordered that an offering and incense be presented to him. Nebuchadnezzar said to Daniel, surely your God is the God of gods and the Lord of kings and the revealer of mysteries, for you were able to reveal this mystery. God is about blessing others through his people so that those people might see God as the real and true and living God and fall in line and live life according to his design and flourish. God, through Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, goes to work to do this very thing with a Babylonian people that Israel, a few months earlier, was not interested in at all. They were not interested in being a blessing to other nations so nations would come in and know and walk with the living God. So God just rolls on without them and just uses these four guys to be about his great purpose. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, Daniel, these faithful few God uses to do what he is about in the world. It's amazing, this little verse that I read to you just a second ago. This is the first moment where King Nebuchadnezzar realizes that there is a God greater than who he is, that there is a God greater than his own gods. And the heart of King Nebuchadnezzar begins to soften in this moment. And if we keep going into the story, his heart isn't all the way there yet. There's another moment where Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, again, King Nebuchadnezzar knows them. He's the one that tested them. He's the one that has seen that these three guys are smarter and better than anything in my kingdom. And he creates a golden statue of himself and asks for his whole kingdom to worship and bow down this golden thing. And Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are like, no, like we're not doing that. And the king calls for them, and he's furious with them, and he asks them, is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve my gods or worship the image of gold that I have set up for you? To make a long story short, their answer was no, and they are thrown into a furnace, and God saves them from this furnace. And the heart of the king softens even more because they see their God do something amazing for them. And the final moment in King Nebuchadnezzar's life is really spectacular in Daniel chapter 6, where he is driven out into the wilderness to live like and act like a wild animal. And it's here, after all of this interaction with these four guys, through the food diet issues that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were going through in the front end, through the wisdom that God had given these four men, through the furnace, through the dreams, after all of these blessings that the king had been on the receiving end of from their God, he writes this, I, Nebuchadnezzar, raised my eyes towards heaven, and my sanity was restored. Then I praised the Most High God. I honored and glorified him who lives forever. His dominion is an eternal dominion. His kingdom endures from generation to generation. He does as he pleases with the powers of heaven and with the peoples of earth. No one can hold back his hand. At the same time, my sanity was restored. My honor and splendor were returned to me. In other words, this God blessed me even more than I was already blessed by him. I was restored to my throne and became even greater than I was before. Now I, Nebuchadnezzar, praise and exalt and glorify the King of heaven because of everything he does is right and his ways are just. And those who walk in pride, he is able to humble. Here's what's really cool about this scene. The God who longs to make himself known, the God who longs to usher people into life with him, I want to put this next slide up. Through these four guys and how God blesses the king, Nebuchadnezzar says to his entire kingdom, Daniel's God, we will worship him. He is the King of kings and the Lord of lords. What God longs to do by ushering other nations, he does this, and he doesn't even need Israel's work. He just needs a few good individuals who are faithful to this. And all of Babylon comes in. And then we keep on going in the story, and this is the one that most of us would know, even if we didn't grow up in church. How many of you heard the story of Daniel in the lion's den? All right, so Daniel in the lion's den, for those of you who haven't, the new king which comes over and takes over Babylon is the king of Persia. His name's Darius, the Mede. And Darius rolls in, overthrows everything, and Daniel becomes a good friend of King Darius. Darius's other aides, this really does sound like political drama, they hate Daniel because Daniel has become a favored member of the court. And he's an Israelite. He's not even a Persian. So they create this false world of Darius is God. And like any ridiculous male, they're like, I am God. So he creates a law and says, no one can worship and pray to anything other than me. And they arrest Daniel. And they bring Daniel before Darius. And Darius knows that he has to follow through with his own decree of death. And Darius throws Daniel into the lion's den, hating the fact that he's throwing his friend in the lion's den. The next morning, he runs out and he finds that Daniel is alive. Darius kind of goes the other way and does not show compassion with his aides that he realized was tricked. It says, basically, he burned all their houses, killed them and their children, and put big rocks over top of their graves. So he kind of went the other way there, but he doesn't know any better yet. Darius declares to the Persian Empire that Daniel's God is God. And you can bet your life over Darius's reign. Let me put this next slide up. This is how far this goes. All of this group of people now for decades worship the God of Daniel. God's agenda is to bless his people so that other people might come to know and walk with the true and living God. This is what he is longing to do in this world. Which really doesn't get any simpler for our lives this morning. this is still God's purpose and agenda in the world. That through his people, just so we're clear, that's you and me. We're not Israelites. I understand that. We're Gentiles. We've been grafted in through Jesus Christ. We are part of the family. God still, through his people, blesses his people so that they might be a blessing to the nations, so the nations would come to know and walk with the true and living God. This is still God's agenda in the world. And like Israel, we have the same choice. We can either align our lives as God's sons and daughters to his agenda, or we can be like Israel and do our own thing. And listen, if you are about your own thing, like Israel, he will move on from you. He will move on from you. You have been gifted by God for his glory, for his purposes, for his agenda in the world. And if you're not going to lean into that as a son or daughter of the living king, like Israel, he'll be like, fine, I've invited you in. I don't ultimately need Phil for my goals. But Phil, you should play because it's awesome. It's awesome. And when we play, there is no sweeter way of living in this life. It is amazing to see your own life getting caught up in the purposes of God as you go about your daily life. And everything else that we live for is a distant second. It's fun for moments and blessings for moments, but it falls short of this beautiful thing that we have been invited into that begins with Abram years ago. So to you high school students, I want to talk to you for a moment. You are working through, what are you going to do with the rest of my life? And as you get to grade 12, you begin to hate the question, so what are you going to do next year? Well, if you keep asking, I'm going to punch you in the face. Like, there's that moment of frustration of like, I'm not really sure yet. So stop asking me, but I will sort it out as we go. But here's my question for you. Do you even allow the filter or God's agenda to shape your decisions? Do you look out at the rest of your life, 50, 60 years, however long it's going to be, and what drives you is, I'm going to align myself in something that allows me to be used of God to put the biggest dent in this world that's lost and broken for the glory of God? Or are you like Israel, where like, this is my plan, and this is what I want to do, and I'm going to pick the school and pick the degree and pick the job and pick the wife and pick the husband or whatever it is that you're after, just and then ask God, like, can you really be about my plans? The answer is no. He is not interested in making you great. Because our names, just by Friday of this coming week, there's parts of our lives where we really don't want to get out there in public. Do you allow the purposes of God to shape your life in high school? That you would begin now practicing these things so that over the next few decades of your life, you can see the power of the living God through your life as you just align it with what he's about and doing in this world. There is no greater life than that. And listen to me, do not believe the foolishness of the culture that says, yes, there is. Because there's really not. There's really not. To you university students, that you are right now like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, where you are learning about the gods of the Babylonians. You are right present in the thick of it, in debate, in conversation, all kinds of things. And listen, don't ever forget this story. That God is able to shape all of the Babylonians in this story. And as you go into the classrooms tomorrow, as you deal with professors that you think are just difficult because they are, God has the ability to shape them in profound ways. So by faith, lean into your Creator. Lean into the one who loves you, who has died for you, who's restored you in all things. And be amazed at what he can do through your quiet, faithful presence in the space that you live. For those of you who go to work tomorrow, whether it's pounding a roof, or whether it's construction, or whether it's a doctor's office, or whatever the case might be, wherever you go, do you align your work, like the very thing you do Monday, 8 to 5, kind of Monday to Friday, do you allow the Creator of this world, the one who has redeemed you, shape how you do your work? That every person that you meet, they're nothing more than another Babylonian, that God longs to be blessed, to bless them through you, that they might come to know the true and living God. It always amazes me how we go about our life. We're into the story now. This is week 18. Feels like forever ago since we started. And this agenda just keeps rolling all the way through. God loves his world. We're weeks away from celebrating the great picture of that love through his Son. And he longs to redeem everybody. He has a heart that they would come to see who he is and live and flourish in every way. And the comedy of it is, for whatever reason, he's invited us into playing that. That if we are looking for purpose and this sense of why we're here, this is it. This is why I love having coffees with some of you. It's amazing where you go into the school and all the students that you cultivate relationships with, this drives it. In your workplace, as you sit with other men and other women, this drives it. And the work to you is like, it's like a weird, like, I'm a missionary and Maritime Electric pays me, but I'm really not working for them, but I'm working for the Lord there. Holland College, Department of Veteran Affairs, like, they are funding the missional work of God for your family so you can do the work of God in those spaces. It's awesome to think of what we have been invited into. And it's sobering to think that he moved on from Israel because they refused to play. He might move on from me if I just refuse to play. If I refuse to align my life to his agenda in this world, because it's coming to an end. Like, his plans will march forward. And I want to play in that. I want to play in that. I want to see men and women like King Nebuchadnezzar, who are filled with pride, say, your God is God. Your God is spectacular. Your God does all the things that you say that he does, that I've seen in your life. It's amazing what we have been invited into. As you go here this morning, I want you to think of these two things. Number one, tomorrow morning when you go to work or whatever it is that you do, it's classroom, university, high school, whatever it is, the person that you talk to, God is trying to redeem them. And number two, you're there for a purpose. For a purpose. To be blessed by God, to bless them so they might come to know him and flourish in life. Let's pray.